Hello, everybody. I am excited to report to you that we are ready now to officially launch a project we've been working on behind the scenes for a while, and that is a Q&R long-form podcast. One of our main vision statements at our church is that we value questions and those who ask them. And we believe that because we believe questions lead to dialogue. Dialogue leads to relationship. Relationship leads to real community, not just fake community on the surface, but real deep relationships and community. And therefore, this project really falls in line with that overall vision. We believe no question should be off the table. So we're going to look at about one episode a month between now and the end of the year. Questions about God's existence, are multiple religions right? How do you deal with evil and suffering? What do you do about sexuality in today's day and age? So many questions out there that we're going to deal with. Today, the question we're going to look at is one of the foundational ones, which is this: does God exist? Whether you actively think about that question, or maybe you haven't in a long time or ever, the answer to that question has huge ramifications for how you live out your life on a day-to-day level. And therefore, we're going to be tackling all different aspects of that question. We're going to look at the Big Bang and evolution. We're going to look at human rights and how those developed, and truth and relativity, and how does that interact with the idea of God's existence. So whether you're wrestling with this issue particularly for yourself, or maybe you're listening for a friend, we really hope that this podcast will help you think through what you believe and why you believe it. I hope you enjoy it. And today is our first day. I'm joined by Becca Hanna, who is our director of children's ministry at our church. She does a lot more than that, but that's her formal title. And we decided to start with at the top. So the question is, why does God exist, or does God exist? But there's obviously lots of other questions that are part of that as well. Mm-hmm. But Becca, we're going to talk about that. How do you feel about talking about does God exist? Where are you at?
I think it's a big question. And I intuitively know that that question is important. But what I think it's important for us to start with is actually, why do we need to answer this question? Hmm. I think there are a lot of people, myself included, who maybe grew up in a home that was talking about God, or in a culture that talked a lot about God. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're from the South, or maybe you're just in church and this is just what you believe. It's just what you're told. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us probably don't give a lot of thought to does God exist, because we're just told he does, right? The answer is. So the first question I think we actually need to ask is, why is this an important question for us to ask at all? Why should I listen to this? What's important about being able to answer that question?
Well, I think it's about, I mean, if you're not a Christian, or you're somewhere in between, like you're kind of, we're designing this podcast for everybody in between, like mm-hmm. wherever you are on the sort of spectrum of belief, as we like to say. I think it matters for that reason as well, like, because, so in some ways we're saying, why does this matter? I mean, where I would start would be because as individuals in this world, if we want to live and exist, these are questions that are connected to greater purpose and meaning of life questions. So when I used to work with college students, I'd sit down and they know where I was coming from, but I'd just say, hey, you tell me, why are you here? And interestingly, they were in an exploration phase. They didn't quite know. So I think there's where I would start would be that we should care, because everybody can't live life without some greater meaning of what am I here for. Now, maybe what you're here for is there is nothing else here. And I have a lot of friends in the city that try to say that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's really difficult to try to construct an identity where you believe that you've come from nothing, you've randomly formed through millions of years, and so there's no larger purpose and meaning. And when you die, you're going to go to nothing. But try to live your life as if you have purpose and meaning now. I have a lot of friends that do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hard place to start. But I think I think you were saying, even if you do believe in God, like there needs to be you need to have thought about this too at some level. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think everyone should actually ask this question, but the manifestation and what it's going to mean to you is really different. So on that spectrum that you're talking about, some of it will lead to, maybe I don't believe in God and this is going to answer some questions or some even challenge me in how I'm thinking without even consciously doing it.
Yeah.
Versus maybe someone who is claiming to be a Christian and just says that God does exist, but can't actually tell you why they
can
believe
articulate
that.
It. Yeah. Right.
And I think there's this salvific sense in the middle of that, right? So believing in God is the first step towards becoming a Christian. You have to believe in God first, all the way to someone who lives and says and professes to be a Christian, but can't tell you why they know that God exists. And there's actually hope in being able to answer that question.
That's really helpful, because I'm just trying to zoom out. I'm trying to think about our listeners. I bet you most people, this sounds like a very intellectual question, like does God exist and stuff like that. And you know, why, you know, just, let's just live, let's just do our lives. And so whether you're, you know, on a walk or if you're on a run right now, you're kind of like, this is too intellectual, this is too heady. But you just kind of gave to me the grounds of saying, hey, you owe it to yourself to live an informed life and to at least kind of, this touches everything from the movies you watch, the friends you're with, to why you wake up in the morning, why you get up. So I know it's it sounds heady, but actually it's immensely practical, immensely real. And so we'll try to keep it as real as possible. But if I could get slightly nerdy for a second, philosophically, you don't know what you can, how to live or use something unless you know what it's for. It's called teleos, which means, I think I forgot who said this, but it stuck in my head. If aliens, you know, millions of years from now, you're like aliens.
Mm-hmm.
If aliens from millions of years from now come to Earth and there's no life on Earth, but they find a watch and they see it on the ground. It's somehow this watch is made of titanium. Maybe it's still, that's why it's still around. And they start banging it against a rock and the glass breaks and they go, well, this must be a bad watch. We would all know, although we no longer exist, we'd all know, that's not how the watch was meant to be used. That's not the point of the watch. You don't know how something should be used unless you know how it was created. And sort of the same thing for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we ask this question, does God exist? Because the answer, he doesn't, is going to change how we live our lives. And the way, if he does, then it changes how we live our lives as well. I know it's a little nerdy, but what do you think?
No, I actually think that's really important, because how we answer this question affects how we interact with coworkers, how we think ourselves and how we interact with the world in our internal being, but then how we interact with coworkers, people in our apartment, or our children. I'm thinking about, how do I answer this question for my 9-year-old who's wanting me to tell her how I know God exists? So regardless of where you are, answering this is really a fundamental question before you have to move forward. Another thing that we really need to answer is, what do we mean by God? So let's kind of pull the question apart. So if we're going to say, how do we know that God exists? What do we mean by God? If we're going to talk about God's existence, we've got to start there.
Yeah. Can we start, again, I think this is important. And maybe this is going to disappoint the listeners. I'm going to come out and say it from the beginning. If we're talking scientifically, can you scientifically prove God's existence or not prove God's existence? It's very, very hard to disprove anything, because our science is based on what you can see. But we also know from science that you can't always see everything, and just because we don't have the instruments now. So I'm going to disappoint everybody and say, I don't believe that you can actually prove God's existence. I also don't believe that you can disprove God's existence. When it comes to like a logical, and I've sat through so many debates, I've seen so many people try evidence. They try to say this, I see evidence for God. I see evidence for not God. And at the end of the day, that's evidence is just that. It gives you data points, but it can't actually get you to a place where you can say 100%, I now know. And that's okay, because so much of life is that way too, right? Prove scientifically that there is love, you have the same problem. Prove scientifically that Napoleon existed. We have data, we have letters, we have eyewitness accounts, but since the person no longer exists and they're in the past, that's all we have is what other people have said. And so I think we can say, oh, probably, maybe, but we don't have 100% scientific, verifiable proof. And that's what I just think is important to get that out of the way.
Yeah. So you're answering the question, what do we mean by no?
Yeah.
Before, I'm asking the question, what do we mean by God?
Well, I think the reason why I went with what do we think by no is I feel like you almost have to hit that first before we even get to God. But now by God, I think we, I don't know about you, but I'm comfortable making God as a being that's omnipotent, in charge. I mean, there's different kinds, right? Greeks had gods that were, situated and particular. I think for our discussion, God is that being that is beyond us. And some people like to, I think you could fit a lot of types of religions and different views in there, but I think we're going to keep God in a very distant reality that is powerful, perfect, all-knowing, omnipotent, transcendent. I think I'm going to define God in that kind of space.
Okay.
Because that probably for our purpose is the best kind of space. But what would you say?
Yeah, I would say God's a creator of everyone and everything.
Right.
So if we're thinking about God as a being, we're talking about the creator of the earth, the creator of the world, and everything in it.
Right.
And I can think the New City Catechism
that
we teach every Sunday morning to our kids to quote that. So there's a big picture in a sense of who God is, and then we can narrow it down to simply saying he's the creator of everything. That's what we're talking about.
I'm comfortable with that for our purposes. And what I'm trying to say is we're not going to be able to, and I'm not going to be able to prove God's existence. I also can feel very comfortable saying, I know people can't also disprove God's existence as well. Just like a miracle, right? If a miracle happens, it happens outside of the way the natural law, the way things normally work. That's why it's called a miracle. But since it's not replicable, you can't prove it. It's going to be very difficult to disprove it. When somebody says a miracle happened, it's a data point. You can do all kinds of stuff about reliability and eyewitness accounts, but you're not going to be able to do that. I think that's just important to say that from the get-go. Now, when it actually comes to, then why are we talking? Why are we even here? I think there are lots of ways to kind of get at this and to try to make it as not direct and as simple. I'll just put it this way. I think God, as your definition, Becca, as the one who is in charge, creator of all things, there seems to be, I think, provable. Almost everybody will agree, from a scientific point of view, that the universe is expanding. It is, and what right now people will tell you is that it all started when the universe was one solid, small, about the size of a pin. Space, and then it exploded, and it's been expanding ever since. I think that's the view that's in secular Western culture these days. Mm-hmm. The question people still have to ask is, well, but why? Why did it exist? Where did it come from? And why did it explode? And we don't have those answers to that. But we know that by the laws of physics, something only moves if something pushes it and makes it move. And so the unmoved mover is a traditional argument for God's existence, and I think it's a very compelling one because what actually started it all?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really high up.
Yeah, you are.
But I don't know. Well, you can say that doesn't really move me. What does that do for you?
Well, you actually just said unmoved mover.
Right.
What does that mean?
If everything only moves because something moves it, right? Here's my coffee cup. It's moving because I'm pushing it. Everything in the world, breath, every atom only moves because something else makes it move.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know this is a little nerdy, but what makes the thing, what's the first thing to make everything move?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any rational argument for that. And I would say that's proof of God's existence because something has to be the first mover. And a lot of counter arguments are, well, just because we don't know the answer doesn't mean that there isn't one. And I hear that, but I think it's a credible argument that there's a God, that something has to be the unmoved mover that moves everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking at me like, it doesn't sound like that's effective for you.
That makes sense.
Okay.
So I guess I'm just asking, so we're there, right? The unmoved mover where there's always something that makes the consequence of something else move.
Right.
And the question is, does God exist?
Right.
So where do we start answering, yes, God exists and he's the mover?
Well, I said you can't prove it, but then I think what you can do, you can't prove God's existence or non-existence, but I think you can give pieces of evidence. The first piece I just gave was the idea of an unmoved mover. It's not the, you know, slam dunk, but what I've also done, and maybe this is more subjective, is I've actually sat with students, I've given them a piece of paper, and I've said, all right, let's just say God exists on this side, God doesn't exist on this side. How does it actually affect your life? And then I want you to compare and contrast how you live your life now. And what we realized is that if you believe in universal human rights, if you believe in that there are morals that everybody agrees with that are objective, if you believe in there's purpose and meaning in my life, those beliefs have to be rooted in the concept that there is actually a God, because they only make sense in a space where there's a God. If there's not a God, it's a lot harder to argue for how there are universal rights, there are universal morals, there are universal truths. And so I've sat with students and I said, hey, you're the one living your life, and you have these assumptions, but do you realize those assumptions are rooted in that you actually believe in God's existence? So I was trying to go objectively top down, but there is a subjective way to kind of say, hey, you know, I'm not the driver force. You tell me what explains reality the best for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, try to make yourself be consistent. If you say there's not a God, well, to be consistent, then you need to live this way. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of people say, well, okay, I'm just going to live inconsistently. And that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
You almost have to believe in innate goodness to be able to have that other category.
What do you mean?
So I have to believe that I, in and of myself, am good. When I look at the world and I look at morals and I look at the way I want to live, when I look at the government, when I look at I'm not going to steal my neighbor's packages, or I'm going to teach my children to live in a particular way or to be successful or achieve any of those things, the reason why I would want to do those things would have to then be an internal drive, an internal goodness that only comes from myself.
Yeah, so I guess you're asking why. You're asking, I think I'm hearing you. Why would you even have those assumptions?
Right. Why would I not just go get what I want when I want it and how I want it? Because if it's just my world and I'm living in it and my goodness comes from me, then I'm the one creating what those morals are.
So play devil's advocate. I have friends that, you know, they know where my assumptions are. They know where I'm coming from. And they say, yeah, but we just all know that we're supposed to live good lives and have this innate sense. And we don't need an overarching view of God. I think we just all know to live this way. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think they have a false sense of self.
Why?
Because I know how bad I am. I know that half of the time I strive really hard to be the kind of parent I want, but I have to have help doing that. And the other half, I'm yelling at my kids.
You just have low self-esteem. No,
that's a whole other podcast.
Well, but I'm saying there's a lot of.
But it's a self-awareness. I think it's a reality of self-awareness that you have to divorce yourself from if you're not going to believe in the goodness of God.
That's actually a really good point. I think, and I've actually, when I've talked with students and just other folks, there's almost a question before. Is there a God or is not a God? You have to ask yourself, can I actually have the ability to know the difference? Because you have to trust your own sense that, you know, because let's say
you have to be God.
Yeah. Well, you could think there's some sense you're proving. I think you're showing that people have a pretty high view of their own ability to judge. That's a whole nother kind of conversation we're not even having right now. It's probably another podcast that's a huge assumption to say that I can actually see reality well and that maybe it's not already colored and jaded and whatnot. So it's almost like, are people essentially good and are able to evaluate, or are people essentially not good? That's a whole, again, not provable, but I think the best way to add it is, does the data in our world give us the sense of one over the other? And I think there are idealistic folks that do think like, well, look at the world, people are essentially good. But then I think you also look at the headlines and you look at the wars and what we've done to each other. And you say, well, there's credible evidence here that people are not essentially good. And that changes then how you answer this question on lots of levels. We got deep fast.
Yes,
just so you
and
know.
I think it's ironic that people use that to prove that God doesn't exist.
What do you mean?
The wars, the tsunamis, the destruction in our world. We actually, people use that to try to prove that God doesn't exist, because if he did, why would those things happen?
Right. Instead of, I think what you're saying, instead of saying, well, or maybe that's proof of where we've gone wrong and that stuff. And that's a whole, that's another podcast.
God, another podcast.
Our agency and responsibility. And then, yes. Well, if God's in charge of everything, then, you know, and where's the balance on that? And I think we will get there. But
yeah,
that's why we're starting here, though, because this question is connected to all these other aspects. And as confusing as it is, I think that's why we still owe it to ourselves to say, okay, where are we going here? And you know, what do I believe and how does that affect what we're doing? So, yeah, but that's why I start with a blank sheet of paper for a lot of folks and say, hey, I'm not going to let, I can sit here all day and tell you the unmoved mover argument. I can tell you the argument for how there's a logical argument where the idea that you can even conceive of a perfect, and since everything in the world is imperfect, the fact that you can conceive of it shows that there has to be, and that's God. That's the ontological argument from Anselm. So there's just these, but a lot of people just go, eh, you know, that doesn't move me, ironically. So that's why I always start with the subject and say, hey, here's a piece of paper. You tell me how you live your life, and does it seem like the way you live your life, does it really align with a belief in God, that God exists, or not a belief in God exists? And I think I can show folks usually over some time saying, you can only have the assumptions you have about yourself and the world, and if you actually believe that there's some sort of universal truth and power, and that can only come from a belief that there actually is a God. Push back or disagree, but I think that's where the nerdiness, headiness meets with like real life, like why this actually matters, whether you live in the suburbs or in the city or in a rural area, and what you do day in and day out, it affects it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want us to go to the three factors, the rational, the personal or experiential, and the social.
Okay.
And I think it's important for us to kind of unpack each one of those.
Okay. Which one do you want to do first?
Whichever one you'd like to go for.
I don't know.
You're unpacking
Set it up. What do you mean?
Well, so in those categories, we know everything we do because we believe it is reasonable to do so depending on whatever we're believing.
Okay.
And so we're all coming to a conclusion, whether we are aware of that conclusion or not, whether you're a mom on the playground or whether you're, you know, sitting down on Wall Street, you're coming to a conclusion.
Okay.
And so why are people coming to this, whatever conclusion it is? So rationally speaking, how can we know that God exists?
Right.
Which you've kind of answered some.
I've already done some.
But I want us to kind of break it down to organize the okay. content of it.
All right. Let's take the concept of love. Is without a God, I would argue, love is a chemical process of that's related to the electrical firings of my brain that makes me feel connected with intimacy to somebody else so that I can pass my genes on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. That's what evolutionary biology basically says is the basis for how we've developed, that this concept of love or intimacy is really just sort of a nice biological factor for me to pass on my genes to the next generation.
I hope that's not how you explain love to your wife.
But keep going. It's not, but I'm trying to. But this is the compare and contrast. I think love and intimacy, if the world is bigger than just our biology, and love is a commitment that transcends, that goes beyond, whether it's to an individual or to this transcendent being. Mm-hmm. That then now love has a almost out of this world property. But if this world is all that there is, and as I said, you evolve from nothing, you go to nothing, then love is just a chemical process, and it's just a way to gel things, and then it's the way for the powerful to control the powerless, because it's that's all what it comes down to. So I mean did I put that in the right categories? But that's how I would in some ways compare and contrast love and intimacy, if you believe in God versus if you don't believe in God. Anything to add on that? Or I do not explain that to my wife that way. Honey, I'm just, you know, the neurons are firing right now.
Yeah, but there's a reason why you don't.
Yeah, because it's not, I wouldn't call that love and intimacy. Most other people wouldn't either. Mm-hmm. So there's a subjective, rational trend that the way that our experience of love, intimacy points to tilts for me, the scales towards there probably is a God versus there probably is not a God in that sense. Anything that you would add on that for his love and intimacy?
Yeah, I think my brain just automatically goes to God as the creator and a relationship with God.
Makes sense.
And we were created to be in relationship, and therefore that's who we are.
Right. If God makes us as the creator, then by de facto, we're made for relationship with that being, with God, and therefore
loving relationship.
And therefore, love actually has not just a purpose, but it's a part of the nature of God and part of our nature then too.
Which is really a step further than does God exist?
Yeah. Going down there. But I think that's why we're saying this is related. I would also go with human rights. I mean, this is, again, I like to dabble in the academic world. There's great debate going on right now. Where do they come from? Because there are civilizations in the past, and there will be in the future, and even currently, that do not believe in universal human rights. And now some would say, well, that's their fault. They're less evolved. But then you get into the charge of, well, isn't that kind of a type of colonialism to basically say, well, we know better and we're going to tell you what to do. But where does this concept come from? And maybe very careful, because I think we actually, when we're thinking about doing this, we had this kind of conversation. I'll bring it in here. There are civilizations that have believed in equality between men and women. There are civilizations that have, but when we say universal human rights, we mean across all, every single people group.
Dignity.
Yeah, and giving people the dignity and respect. That doesn't come from Greco-Roman. Aristotle believed in, that doesn't come from Eastern religions that see that there is, you know, there's the wheel of samsara, problem is suffering, but as far as actual human rights, that doesn't really exist, because nothing exists in the way that it really is. It doesn't come from these other kind of traditions. It comes from, and a lot of historian scholars, Tom Holland in his book Dominion, I think, does a really good job. It's a thick book, but kind of shows how this concept of human rights actually is, comes out of the Judeo-Christian background you have a creator God who's made all things in a loving way. I think you can, so if you like the idea of human rights, you have to ask yourself, that's great, but where does that come from? Is that explained better by that there is a God or there's not? And I think I know friends that they say there's not a God by believing human rights. I think I think there's more of a faith actually in that space to believe that, because you have to then say, where does it come from? And it doesn't just come naturally out of, from an evolutionary point of view, altruism, where does that come from? Well, it's because it helps me pass my genes, but that's for individual, not necessarily collective. I know I'm getting nerdy too much, but where are you on human rights? Are you for them?
I am for the dignity of people, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes,
I am. But if I'm, you know, I'm a New Yorker. If I just met you and didn't know where you're coming from, I'd be like, but why? But, you know, why do you believe that? Where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, as a Christian, it comes because we are created in the image of God.
Exactly.
And our value comes from Him. It's not intrinsic in and of ourselves.
Right. But
Again, I know, because I know how my heart is.
Right.
I like to think that I have value outside of God, which is what gets me in trouble. I want to find worth and value, and I want you to worship me based on me. And that's where I get in trouble with idolatry.
And there's the, again, probably another podcast, that the healthy sense of self and self-worth. And dignity for yourself, but then also a cosmic understanding of where that's marred and broken, and how you can be both created good but also fallen. And that's a whole, see, all these concepts. I'm glad this is actually our first podcast, because we're almost kind of hopefully whetting people's appetite of saying these are things that have to be talked about.
Yeah, it's why the world has to have self-confidence,
right?
Because they can't have confidence in Christ,
right,
in their creator.
And so we have to compare and contrast what explains reality the best.
Okay, we got to get back here though.
Okay.
Because I think the next thing that we need to talk about in the rational reasoning here is, objectively, can we prove that God exists from knowing that Jesus was on earth?
I mean, you're asking me as a minister. I think if Jesus is who he says he is, when it comes to the biblical claims, then yes, because he argued that he was the Son of Man, which is prophetic vision from Daniel that was to be the Messiah who was to come from God, is God and from God. So, yes.
So what I actually mean is, historically speaking, when we look at the person of Jesus, there's not really an argument that Jesus existed.
Right. I mean, there's not an argument again. Well, actually, I've heard some people say, have questioned that, but most scholars believe that there was a physical person named Jesus because of the evidence in history and from documents not in the Bible.
So can we use that to then lead us down the path of, therefore, God exists?
If he is who he says he is, because I think there's debate, right, that there was a man named Jesus 2,000 years ago, but was he just a good teacher? Mm-hmm. Was he actually who he says he was? Was he somewhere in between? Did his disciples turn out to be somebody who's different? But I do. But this is actually one of the Christian particularities, which is if he is who he says he is, that is proof that God exists because he's God.
Mm-hmm. So how would that be different than, say, Buddha?
Well, Buddha said, live this way. Jesus said, I am the way. I mean, Buddha said, I've come to point you the way. And Jesus says, I am the way. I think those are very different. Both were considered individuals that were extremely great examples and wonderful. But I think it comes down to Buddha didn't claim to be God. I mean, that's the main difference, I would say, which is, people say that's grounds for why you shouldn't believe in Jesus. I'd say, well, that's even more reason to figure out if he really was. I mean, what would you say the difference between Buddha and Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's very clear. Jesus claimed to be something entirely different.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I see it's very different. But from a secular person, like, they're both, the teachings are similar, be good, try, you know, don't murder, don't lie. Is that what you're getting at? Or I'm just trying to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the existence of God's word, the existence of Jesus, they're so integral to understanding our understanding of who God is, which then to me is kind of answering. It's not totally answering because you've said we can't necessarily completely prove yeah. that there is this omniscient right. God that exists. And we so often think about it as this guy, you know, on a throne somewhere sitting. Right. And that's just not what we're really talking about.
Yeah.
But Jesus and God's word gives us kind of legs to walk this out.
Because the Bible is a historical document and says that Jesus actually historically died and rose again. I mean, Buddha never claimed to be God. Jesus did. And there are ways to evaluate. Like, in John 20, Mary is the first person to see Jesus. And in eyewitness accounts, 2,000 years ago, the women were not considered to have valid testimony in a court of law. So if you were trying to convince a bunch of people to believe this testimony, you would never pick women, particularly Mary, who was considered culturally compromised because of her past morally, and then she was also she was not credible because she was known as the individual that was demon possessed. So you wouldn't do that. So in a weird way, because that's how the Bible actually writes out actually who saw Jesus first. And you wouldn't normally do it that way. That's actually very strong proof that it probably was this way. And now, these are pieces of evidence. Can they get to proof? No, but they give you a lot of, it forces the person who doubts and says this is not true, that Jesus wasn't raised. Then you have to say, then what's the alternative reason for how Christianity exploded? How did it, and I think the other possibilities that his body was stolen, that his, you know, people, he never really died. I've heard that one. You know, he was wounded and then he got up. I mean, that seems a lot less possible than what the evidence shows, which is that you had all these people post-death see him, risen, nails in the hands, all that stuff. So I think that's what you're trying to get at, is that because Christianity is a historical religion, mm-hmm. it forces us to ask these kind of more intellectual questions that if it's true, then we can base ourselves on saying, no, it's, then God's existence is real because Jesus is real, mm-hmm. because he is who he says he is. So what we've done is we've looked at the, you know, more rational reasons yep. that there's love, that there's human rights, that I think rationally you can kind of look at the evidence for Jesus's life. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also more experiential reasons as well for why we can kind of say that God actually exists. And I think you can't discount the billions of people over their lives when they've prayed, when there's been changed lives, when there's real freedom from guilt and shame. I think that there's credibility there. I mean, I should go to my own personal story. I grew up, I had, you know, in a Christian home with a pastor who articulated the truth of God's existence pretty well from an intellectual point of view. Didn't really move me. I heard it, but I still wanted to go live my life and do my thing in college. One of the ways that I was able to come back after exploring a lot of world religions is I looked at my parents and I saw how they forgave and repented to each other. And forgave is, this person hurt me, but I'm going to let them off. And repented is, I've hurt them, but I can confess it and say it. Mm-hmm. And I had lived enough in the world to say, that's not how people naturally do life. Most people, if you minimize when you hurt somebody else, well, that wasn't really me, right? You see this on the internet or—
Innate goodness.
What? Yeah. Well, yeah. You see it in interviews, right? Like, yeah, I might've done this, but that wasn't me. It's almost sort of a lack of ownership, or they ignore it. And when somebody does hurt you, you're like, you're dead to me. Cancel culture. Mm-hmm. Even though we didn't have that term, you know, 20 years ago, whenever I became a Christian 25 years ago, I was able to look at my parents and say, wait a second, there's something different here. Even though I looked at all these different religions, mm-hmm. there's something experiential that I'm getting that I don't think naturally humans forgive and repent like this. I think there's a natural version, but I think there was a supernatural version up to the degree of pain and hurt from other people. And I think that's an experiential argument for God's existence mm-hmm. that I think moved me, but I don't know about you.
Well, I think it's really hard for the Western world to get on board with that.
What do you mean?
The more we evolve as a culture and a people, I think, in the Western world, the more we want logic and reason to reign, mm-hmm. and our experience is questioned.
Hmm.
So I...
Interesting.
By nature, I'm a very logical person. And mm-hmm. if something doesn't make sense to me, you're going to have a really hard time convincing me otherwise. because I don't trust, here we are with the self-confidence thing. I don't trust that I'm always going to come to the right conclusion myself, or that I'm going to experience something exactly the way it is, because I know there's so many different perspectives. Hmm. So when you're hearing someone's story, you're going, that's great. That's your perspective of your story. But I know there's so many different sides to whatever you've experienced that it's sometimes hard for me to believe what someone has experienced, because I know it's just a really small slither of a huge picture.
Hmm.
So I think for the Western world, we're looking at, and things that happen, miracles that happen, you know, in other countries, or that are, you hear stories from missionaries from other places where you're going, it's not that I don't believe you. Right. It's just really hard to wrap my brain around that,
right.
because I can get in my car and go through the drive-thru and get exactly what I want when I want it, exactly how I want it. And I can get everything that I need in a particular way at a particular time. Mm. And there's a less desperation to experience God.
Mm.
And so even though I've experienced God in my life, I'm quicker to discount that as a reason for God's existence.
That's actually really interesting and fascinating, because I think the fact that you're right, that there's billions of people out there and you're seeing all these examples, since you as an individual, particularly, you know, we're situated in the Western world, you kind of say, yeah, 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 but that's you. Because I know myself. And then actually, that's a move that's pretty recent. It used to be outside you was fact and inside was my opinion. And I needed to align myself with fact outside. So if somebody said things, I'm like, well, then maybe it's true and I need to align myself with that. There is a move that's changed with how we see things now. Inside is fact and outside is everybody else's opinion. That might be your experience, but that's not my experience. Inside, my experience mm-hmm. is what matters the most. And therefore, my job is to align what I look when I look inside and make sure everybody else agrees with my view yeah. of identity, my view of who I say I am. And that leads to a host of problems. It's again, another podcast of mm-hmm. like, can you really even find out who you really are by looking inside? Can you, are you really able? What it's trying to do is saying truth is not out, is not external. Truth is internal. Opinion is out there. Fact is in here. And from hearing from you, you're like, yeah, that's why I doubt these kind of things. And I think that is one of the problems we have, is that then everybody is in these sort of localized spaces of, well, what's true for you is true for you. What's true for me is true for me.
It's a really high view of self.
Well, my pushback, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but you're saying this is the Western world.
No, in general.
Yeah. But the pushback on that is that's nice in that moment, but nobody really lives that way. Because why do we do cancel culture? Because we obviously think my truth applies to you.
Yeah.
Why do we actually have these view of that's of justice and right and wrong? Because I believe at some level, so we kind of talk out of both sides of our mouths. On one level, we're like, well, you know, Michael, you're a pastor. That's good for you. True. I'm like, well, but then they're very people. We all still want to be able to say mm-hmm. this is what's okay and then what's not. So I think we have to just be honest about that. And that, again, that's why we're even doing this podcast, to say this stuff matters.
Mm-hmm.
But that's helpful to kind of say, hey, the idea of experiential prayer, other people's experiences and seeing that, you're saying in some ways that might become less and less impactful as we center ourselves in our own experiences versus somebody else's.
Yeah, I think it's hard for us to believe in a spiritual world.
Yeah.
Because it's outside of reason for us.
Well, it's outside self in some ways.
Yes.
Although unless there's a lot of people who I know that are spiritual but not religious, because they look inside and they like the connection to that. And then they're okay with that as long as it's because it's their own internal identity. They've looked inside for that. Again, that's still problematic because it's not connected to some larger truth. And they would be okay with that from what I've talked with my friends. They're like, it's okay if my spiritual self is not the same thing. It's hard to have a society that agree that to live well together. And we're trying to do that. And then it's also hard to talk about anything. Because what's funny is when you say what's true for you is true for you, is true for me, is true. You're literally not really believing that the moment you say that, because you're pushing your view of what you think is true for you on me.
Which means I disagree with you.
Right. And I'm like, I disagree with it. But then all of a sudden, there's no way not to actually make these truth claims. Even when we say, hey, I'm not going to push on you on that. That's you're by saying that, you're pushing that's the right view versus somebody else's view that wants to do it differently.
Yeah.
Which then goes back to that why experiential stuff I still think matters, even if you're right, people are discounting it more and more.
I think it's important for us to answer the question then, okay, so I believe something exists. I believe a higher power exists.
Yes.
How can I believe that it's the God of the Bible? Why should I believe that the God of the Bible is the God that exists?
Well, now we've moved more steps, right? If the first thing we did was, is how can you know anything? If there's all this truth stuff. If the second step is, what do we mean by God? And we define that. If the third step is to say there is no way to actually scientifically prove, but there's lots of evidence.
Which every time I go into the Museum of Natural History, I think God is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. But a lot of people go into a natural museum and they don't come to that same conclusion. So I want to acknowledge that. Then the question is, well, how do you move from just is God? I think when the next meeting I have with people about this is, I say, okay, now that you believe that there's a God, it's more likely that there's a God because of the way your experience is mm-hmm. versus not likely. Now the question is God knowable? And there are a deist is this view that God, there is a God, but he's so far out there. He kind of the image people use is like a clock, that he makes the world like a clock, you know, fine tunes it, does it, and then has it running, but then stays completely distant. A lot of the founders of America had moved from a Judeo-Christian to a deistic view that there was a God, but God wasn't personal, was not knowable, and left it at mm-hmm. that. So you're asking, I think if you have an unknowable God, you're actually still in the same bait. You're actually in the same boat as if there isn't a God, because if he's unknowable, how do you know what the right truth is? How do you know what purpose and meaning is? How do you know how we were created? A lot of times you were talking about, well, God created us and made us in it. Well, that is a Judeo-Christian view.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have the same problem. That means it's more likely God probably is knowable. And then that's when we can start comparing and contrasting the different beliefs of a knowable God. And I think that's where Christianity, with its view on resurrection and its historical, evaluable space, becomes helpful, because we can say, well, did this happen or did it not happen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm seeing your face and you're like, well, that's not how I got there.
No, I'm working. I'm processing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think even in the midst of this entire conversation, in my mind, I've continued to come back to, this is the best, we couldn't have come up with this kind of a God.
Hmm.
Like, I couldn't have come up with a God that is all the things that the Bible says God is.
Yeah.
Apart from the Bible teaching me that that's who God
is. I think I'm hearing you, that's an argument for how it's probably more likely that this is the true God, because if we could come up with it, well, that would be really easy to then say where it came from in a historical or civilization. But if we couldn't have, that might be because that's proof of God. I think that you're absolutely right. Now there's the Jesus version of that, which is, how did people who didn't believe in a one person resurrection in the middle of time all of a sudden change? Because the people least likely to believe in that would have been first century Jews. Like, I think today people would have been more likely to go, oh, God can be, Jesus can be man and God. Well, duh. But back then, at that moment, no way. Then nobody would have had that. So how do you explain that? But then you're also appealing to the idea of a Trinitarian God that is three persons, three in one. Who would have come up with that? That defies everybody's reality. So the fact that that was, and actually even those of you who are listening that know the history of the church and how the Trinity developed, even the church was unclear.
Just not many people.
I know. Well, I'm you're talking to everybody else. I'm talking to maybe a smaller sliver of people.
It's okay.
But I think the average person is like, yeah, that doesn't, three in one, not, who would have come up with that concept? And I think there is an argument to be made that that might be one of the evidences that this is real.
Mm-hmm. So then I really think the next question that we need to move toward then is, okay, we've talked about God existing, a God existing.
God needs to be knowable now.
He needs to be knowable. And then the God of Christianity, that is the one we find in the Bible.
Yeah.
By the
way, I like how I was going to stay in like this very like, just is there God or not? But you're like, no. You're a pastor, Michael. I work at a church. Like, let's get to that.
We're going to be practical about this.
I like it.
Because I think what people are experiencing in the world today is a lot of fear and a lot of what ifs.
Okay.
And whether you choose to watch the news, or whether you choose to sit with your friend who has cancer, or whether you are, you know, hearing about abuse that's happened in the church, or you just name it, right? All of these terrible things that I think we know more about because of the internet and social media. We just have so much more information about all the terrible things that are happening all of the time. So when I don't turn...
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. Right. I'm overwhelmed by it.
Right.
And
that's why a lot of people turn it off and they just scroll, like, I want to stay on Instagram.
Yeah, I want to look at all the pretty things until those pretty things are overwhelming too. And then what do I do?
And that's left myself. A whole another conversation.
But if I'm looking at, if I'm overwhelmed by all of the terror in the world that's happening, how do I reconcile that with, okay, there is a God that is knowable, and then there's a God of Christianity, but there's all this terror around me. How do I reconcile those two things?
Well, I don't want to go to the problem of evil question, which, you know, how can a good God let bad things happen? Which is a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I don't actually think we need to answer that. I think it's more of, if God does exist and if he is this God, then how do I find comfort in being able to answer, does God exist? Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And here's why it's comforting for someone who's looking at the terror.
I mean, the quick answer is, no other faith that I know of has God enter into creation and experience everything that is so hard and hurtful. That gives us a way to, we have a God who relates to us, but putting a God who sacrifices himself for everyone else at the core of who you are gives us a sense of, well, then if that's the core of who you are, you're going to end up sacrificing, caring for everybody else in a powerful way that you wouldn't have before. So I don't want to, I'm trying not to get to the heady stuff, but the space where the Christian God actually really thrives is actually in suffering, because you have a God not distant from it. You have a God who says, I'm going to do something about it. There's a God who says, yeah, it's bad. It's so bad. I need to come into the world and do something. And I think there's great power in that, more than, and I do, I can't wait till we have that podcast to talk, because I think it's really easy to compare and contrast the different views out there that about how to actually think about suffering, and then where, how does Christianity compare to those? Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of resources in this particular space for that. What, I mean, for you, what would you say?
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. Just kidding. You know, I think to remember that, what does it mean to me that God does exist? He's still in control.
Yeah,
and still, yet all these things are happening.
With all where the disorder, yeah, with all the disorder in the world, if there is really a God, even if this is not necessarily the plan, there's a God who's in that. There's an order. There's a purpose. There's a meaning. There's something out there than just randomness.
Well, and I think it's dangerous to say that this isn't the plan, because it's not my plan. I wouldn't have
done it this
planned
way.
This.
Right.
And just in the reality that I wouldn't have planned it, but I still see, I think part of what's hard in our society right now, and I'm just literally talking for myself, is it's getting harder and harder to find beauty. Because I'm spending so much time looking at evil, not that we need to answer that question, but it's, I think as you get older, maybe it's harder to see beauty if you're not also looking.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to finish that sentence, but there's something about that, that if I can understand and grasp in my small, finite mind and heart that God does exist, that's actually where hope comes from, which then enables me to serve the people around me and to.
Absolutely. And without trying to minimize, there's a lot of hurt, you know, there's unimaginable hurt and suffering. So it's very, I have to be very careful that I think in these kind of, you know, conversations where there's not acute suffering happening, it's really easy just to say there's a God in control. I think that that's not really being kind to people. But I do think, just in a very simplistic way, my children don't always understand everything that's going on in reality, but they know that there's a parent that's there. And even if I never fully trusted my parents. I'm sure my kids don't fully trust me as a parent.
But I don't fully trust myself as a parent, so.
But there's some level of understanding, like, okay, there's somebody out there that sees reality better than I do. Mm-hmm. And I can, even if I don't know if I can really trust this world, there's some level of trust there. We're an imperfect version of that. If there's a God, that is actually a helpful, it's simplistic, but I think it's a helpful image to say, okay, I think it's what you're trying to get at. I can't see beauty right now because everything's broken, but if there actually is a God, then there's a low level of breathe in, breathe out, patience. I'm going to try to figure this out, even if I maybe never fully figure it out. I used to take college students and I say, here's a piece of paper, draw a circle of all possibility and human knowledge, and they draw a circle. I say, now draw a circle of what you know. And some people were more humble and they put a little pin dot. Some people were less humble and they kind of had a bigger circle. But they all agreed that it wasn't everything. And I said, okay, then there's a lot of space here of mystery and the unknown that might have answers that we don't actually have right now. And that should give us pause and humility to say, I want to keep exploring. I want to be curious. I want to know. And maybe that's good grounds to do this podcast and end this podcast to say, hey, that's what we're want to do together, is explore these other areas that maybe we haven't fully figured out and have a good answer on, but there can be. That's one of the benefits of socially doing this as a community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else to say to end?
Yeah, I think we need to talk about if there are people who are wanting to learn more about this, or maybe wanting to do a deeper dive into what this means for them. What are some resources that you would point them to say, here's where we can actually explore this a bit more?
I mean, we're in the realm of something called apologetics, which apology meant make a defense of. And we've talked on two levels here. One is about God in general, and then there's also specifically with Jesus, with Christianity. If you're looking for Jesus, Christianity, the tome that does that focus on the resurrection is N.T. Wright's book called, why am I blanking on it right now? It's the Resurrection of the Son of God. And it's a green book, at least it used to be, but it's pretty thick. But if you can get through it, it gives tons of, it kind of shows how, this is your point earlier, which is if the Christian evidence is credible, it kind of gives credible that there's a God. I think that would be the main tome for that. Mm-hmm. But Richard Baucom's book called Jesus and His Eyewitnesses, also a little heady, but shows how the way the Gospels were written with these eyewitness accounts, those naming things weren't just one. They were little tags that people could go follow up to show and verify the truthfulness of these accounts, which is really, really important because we never would have gotten them now if they were discredited then, but they weren't. So that would be for the particular one. If you're going for more general, any good apologetic book by William Craig or, this guy named Tim Keller wrote a book called Reason for God. Mm-hmm. Some of the opening chapters would be helpful for that.
Okay.
The Case for Christ is another more particular one, Lee Strobel. But yeah, there's some great books out there. The general ones you don't necessarily need to read the Christian authors for because it's just working through those concepts. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think this is a great question to ask, even if we're not necessarily quick to ask it. Mm. I think it's the foundation from where we actually get hope from.
Yeah.
If we think about building a house, the first thing we do is we build a firm foundation. And this is really a foundational question.
Yeah, and I think it's important whether you are someone who's like, I haven't thought of that question ever because I grew up in a mm-hmm. believing home.
Almost probably more important.
More important to yeah. If you're a person who's like questioning everything. We're thankful for you if you're questioning. And we're saying if you haven't asked yourself recently, this is something that is worth it because as you get more secure and say, no, this is what I do believe. And to be honest, if you're worried, I think there's some people who are worried of asking this question because they're scared of what they might find.
That's a great point.
I still would agree to go through it because let's say you'd get convinced that there isn't a God through this process, which by the way, I did. I got convinced there wasn't. And that actually was part of the process to become convinced another time. Because the sooner you live in line with what you really are, how you are, the sooner you can actually have that integrity and honesty to actually live a full life. I would hope it would come back, but I think there's stages for everybody. And it's worse if you're just saying, oh, this is what I've always believed, but unexamined. When hurts hit, you won't have the grounding and found foundation. And if they never hit, you're just going to not have the same level of conviction and identity of purpose and meaning and truth of what I believe and why I believe it. So I still think it's a thanks for those of you who've listened with us. Thanks for doing this journey with us together. And there's more to come.